I'm going to pick up where Sue's left off. And actually, I'm going to pick up into a little bit what Sue was picking up on, something that Sue said, and the importance of wise view and wise intention. And I, those aspects of the Eightfold Path are key. Everybody, we all have a wise view. We all have a view. We all have some sort of intention. Everybody, this is what we operate from. Some people's view is eat, drink, and be merry. Intention follow, behavior follow. Zero sum game. I'm win, you lose. So the wise view that we're talking about here is suffering and the end of suffering. And so these aspects of the Eightfold Path set the stage, and we follow from that. Our behaviors follow from that, our actions and so forth follow from that. So there are like three legs of this Eightfold Path, and they're like legs of a stool. They're developed together. They're complementary. They're mutually supportive. There is the wisdom, panya. There is ethical behavior, sila. And there's concentration, samadhi. The view sets the stage. Intentions follow the view. Our speech and actions align with intentions. And mindfulness, concentration, it keeps us conscious and aware so we can act with our best intentions and not out of reactive conditioning. So first of all, let's start out with sila, ethical behavior. It includes wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. And the actions create an atmosphere. Acting in this regard, others don't have to fear us. We don't have to have regrets about what we say or do. So the ethical behavior, morality, virtue, different terms for this, they follow the intention to live for my welfare, for the welfare of others, and acting in ways that lead to peace. I liked what Tara Brach said from the DC area. She refers to this part of the Eightfold Path as warm-heartedness. And I like that. It really captures the essence. It's a caring about our actions and how they affect ourselves, how they affect others. It's operating from a perspective of good-heartedness, of generosity, of respect. The universal expression of do unto others as you would want done unto yourself. This is a training of the heart. Sila, ethical behavior, is living in harmony and leads to peace of mind. With sila, we're making non-abuse a way of life, a sense of respect for others. We have compassion for ourselves, which is helpful as we can have the courage to turn towards and be mindful of the difficulties in our life. We can have compassion for others, recognizing the needs and suffering of others, knowing we're not alone. We can have a sense of we. A number of years ago, I took this course called Compassion Cultivation Training. It was developed by Stanford University. And it defined the compassion as something that we all have, something that we all have a limited amount of, and something that we can train ourselves to open up more. Compassion is something that can recognize suffering in ourselves and others, an interest and willingness to be close to that suffering, and interest in alleviating that suffering. So this is something that we can understand, we can recognize, we can train ourselves. We can recognize through mindfulness about how we hold back our compassion and caring, how we don't notice, how we get caught up in our agendas, how we're selective in terms of what we can open up to. I personally, opening up to puppies, opening up to babies and children, easy to have compassion there. More difficult to see a homeless person who's kind of very disheveled, might not smell that good, and kind of, you know, acting strange. More difficult to be close to that, or to have compassion and caring for a politician, let's say. But it's something that we can learn, and that's what this practice is, you know, suggesting. There are three parts to this: sila, warm-heartedness, ethical behavior. The first one is wise speech. And speech can either divide or can bring people together. We see that every day, every day. You watch evening news. Wise speech, again, that's aligned with our wise view and intention, is saying what's true, saying things that are helpful, proper timing. You know, it's not always, things cannot always be heard, and speaking in a way that's not harsh. On the other hand, speech to avoid would be gossip, divisive speech, idle chatter, abusive or divisive speech. And we can also consider our internal speech, our internal dialogues, our internal narrative, noticing how and having kindness towards ourselves and letting go of any critical talk. We can often disparage ourselves internally. This could be an area of wise speech, bringing a little compassion and warm-heartedness when we're judgmental. The second part of this leg of the stool is wise action. And this can sometimes be summarized neatly as the five precepts. And many of you know or are familiar with the five precepts. They're personal commitments to refrain from causing harm, noticing our thoughts and inclinations, and refraining from actions that cause harm. So the five are: refrain from causing physical harm, refrain from taking what's not freely offered, which isn't ours, refrain from lying, gossiping, idle chatter, not telling the truth, refraining from sexual misconduct, causing harm with our sexual energy, and refraining from clouding the mind with intoxicants or substances that are going to lead to heedlessness. And casualness and lack of mindfulness in this regard can often result in all the rest of the precepts being overlooked and ignored. Just doing this much, just following these precepts, lots of mental and physical distress and suffering can be averted just by that. Following the precepts and ethical sensitivity require us to consider more carefully what is harmful. A friend of mine, she has rats in her house. She loves animals. She spends a lot of time animal rights and so forth. Yet, she realizes she's not going to live with them. So some people, without consideration of this ethical behavior, say, okay, call it exterminator and wipe them out, not caring about the suffering that an animal would have. She's taking the time. What's an ethical way to eliminate the rats from the house? Traps which aren't going to harm them, poisons which aren't going to extend their suffering. All of these are reflections. Every one of these precepts can be a reflection for practice. What does that mean? They're not clear cut, but they're opportunities for practice. So consider and investigate with mindfulness all these precepts aligned with wise view and intention. The second part of this leg of the stool is wise livelihood. And that's engaging in livelihood which is not going to cause harm. And some of these can be spelled out and are quite obvious. You know, running guns, I guess, would not be a wise livelihood. Running a mink coat, raising mink or coats. Any number of things. Again, it's a bit of a reflection. Even working a hateful job could be unwise livelihood. I had a job one time, software development, and I went to the work and it was just, I just hated it. I spent a lot of time fussing and agitating and things like that. Ultimately, I left. Now, that may not be necessary. I mean, we certainly have to make a living. We certainly have to put food on a table. And we have to provide for our children and others in our lives. So often we have to put up, make compromises. But sometimes in regard to wise livelihood, it might not be the job so much that needs to change, but perhaps our attitude. So perhaps if we have a job like a sewer cleaner or garbage collector or something that we find distasteful, we can turn it from that to a service, to focus on the fact that I'm providing a service for this community. And something that might be on its face distasteful, we can turn into something of wise livelihood. The next part of this is the next leg of the stool is samadhi, concentration. It's samadhi essentially means concentration, and it's not the best translation, but it works. And in this leg of the stool, there are three parts: wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. Again, same word. And this has to do with being awake, to verifying what's happening, to notice what's happening, to respond to the Buddha's invitation to come see for yourself. It's a need to look, to notice, to reflect, and discern. It's a training of the mind. And it begins with our meditation practice. And from our meditation practice, it's expanded out and applied in our daily lives. So reflection allows us to notice our wanting, notice aversion, notice distress. We can notice this with wisdom and warm-heartedness, the other aspects, the other legs of the stool. We can see reactivity without taking it personally. Again, a wisdom component. I like to look at this one as a metaphor for this is I like bird watching. And going into the woods, if I just walk through the woods, the birds are going to scatter. They're going to be quiet. I'm not going to see much. But if I sit and I'm still, the birds start emerging. I start hearing them. I start seeing them interact. I see more birds. I can recognize their behaviors. I can recognize their patterns. So likewise, this area of samadhi, of mindfulness and right effort, right concentration, is like bird watching. It's being still, noticing, and putting in the effort to recognize what's going on. Wise effort is the first part of this one. It's a resolve aligned with view and intention. It's an effort applied to sila, ethical behavior. It's effort applied to refraining from causing harm. effort applied to understanding or mindfulness, to investigation and discernment. This path requires dedication and a willingness to begin again, a willingness to be with, a willingness to turn towards. This is where our effort comes in. It involves renunciation of that which is harmful to ourselves or others. That sometimes can be difficult. We may want to do something, but recognize it as harmful. It takes effort to follow those intentions. So having and adhering to clear boundaries can be supportive. Having a clarity about these boundaries. I am going to do this. This is aligned with my view and intentions. I'm not going to do that. That is not aligned. So a clarity about one's intentions, recognizing what's aligned with the path, and resolving to act in that regard. Wise mindfulness is the next aspect of this section. It says, and has to do with noticing and reflecting on the effects of our actions. And that reflection further informs and deepens our wisdom and understanding. Most animals are aware. Most beings are aware in some respect. A dog is very aware, can follow its nose. It knows all these smells, recognizes other dogs by a smell, sight, hearing. But this is not mindfulness. Humans have ability for reflection. We can recognize what we're doing and that we're doing. We can step back and see from that perspective. We can not only see what we're doing, but we can reflect and notice our motives. We can notice our intentions. We can have a felt sense of our thoughts, our speech, our actions. We're taking it back one more step. It's a deeper mindfulness. And mindfulness even farther. We can recognize the changing mental and physical formations, patterns. We can do it without judgment. We can see clearly without the hindrances. So mindfulness, the deepest mindfulness, you're seeing clearly without the hindrances and seeing a sense of self as simply a mental construct. Back to wise view, reinforcing wise view. Third part of this is wise concentration, samadhi. Not just a singular focus. It's not narrow focus in Vipassana meditation, but more of a stability of the mind while we're being mindful. It could be a singular focus, but rather a collectedness, a staying with, being with difficult emotions or changing conditions with equanimity, noticing natural comings and goings, concentration without the hindrances, wanting or aversion, and without the sense of self. So all three of these aspects of the Eightfold Path work together. Wise you and intentions guide and inform our speech, actions, and livelihood. Mindfulness, steadiness of mind, and wise effort keep us attentive to the path while clarifying, reinforcing, and increasing faith and wisdom and sila, and following the path towards awakening. We can act with good intentions, be mindful of the effects, and further wisdom for future actions. Buddha's teachings and the mindfulness practice have been very helpful in my life. Over the years, it's resulted in a lot less suffering, a lot less distress in my life and in my relationships. There's been less clinging to views and opinions and stuff. There's less reactivity and more mindful responsiveness in speaking and doing. But I want to close here. However, lately I've been noticing how narrowly I've been applying this practice. A narrow circumference. These days, now, there's an increasing awareness of systemic racism. Issues of social and economic injustice, climate change, challenges of COVID-19. And as these are occurring, I'm beginning to reflect more about how Buddhist teachings and wise intention, action, speech, mindfulness, and effort apply to me in relationship to these important social issues. I'm sure many of you are doing the same. So I'm going to end this talk today with an invitation that we all reflect on. These are critical times. Suffering times. Times to be awake, responsive, and caring. So let's end today with an intention to live for my welfare, welfare of others, and leading to peace. Thank you for your attention.
So we're going to have breakout groups again. And with the same overall guidelines that Jerry shared in the first ones of using mindful listening and speaking, it's always okay to pass and to just be present and hold the space. We don't give advice, and we give everyone a time to share. We're going to have a good 20 minutes in these breakout groups. And here's the two different possible questions for you to talk about. One would be to consider committing to practice with one or two aspects of the Eightfold Path for the next month or 2 months or maybe even a whole year. Which would you choose? Which one is kind of calling to you? Sometimes the one that you feel most resistant to might be the one that has your name on it. Or anything that came up in either my talk or Jerry's, any of the comments, or just pretty much you're willing, you know, the conversation is open to what's really up and present for you.